I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver, British Columbia, at thecommentary.ca. For nearly 40 years now, Tojo's has been a popular mainstay in Vancouver's food scene. One of the more anticipated documentaries of the year, The Chef and the Daruma, had its world premiere at the Vancouver International Film Festival last night. And just before the screening, I talked to the film's director, Mads K. Bakkevold, about this movie and what it was like working with Hidekazu Tojo, as he reveals so much about his life and work. The film retraces in a trip to Japan what sort of upbringing it was, and how from early on to today, family was so important to Chef Tojo. We see the influence on his work and artistry as he narrates jobs he had in Japan in various kitchens before he immigrated to Canada in the early 1970s. Even in contemporary sequences where Tojo dines throughout Japan, we see the clever inventor at work, taking in the tastes that might find its way back to Vancouver and his menus at the West Broadway location where he holds court nightly. I'll also ask Mads about what it was like to make the movie and the various pieces of advice that Tojo deploys throughout. One of the things we don't talk about, and I purposely didn't talk about it in our conversation, is the Daruma, these dolls that appear throughout the film that are central in the goal setting that Chef Tojo does through the year. They're such a special part of Tojo's outlook in life and how the film unfolds that I'll leave it to viewers to find out more about them. Mads K. Bakkevold is a freelance director, creative writer, and editor. He has created content for various clients, including television commercials that have earned him 2 Cannes Lions Awards and a Clio. Visit madscarlsenb.com for more. The film screens at least 3 more times, and though they might be sold out by the time this runs, visit vif.org for updates on additional screenings. Please welcome to the Plant Online program, Mads K. Bakkevold. Mr. Bakkevold, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Pretty good yourself.
I'm excellent. It's a big day today, and I'm stoked. Butterflies, of course, but just really excited.
Yeah. So, what has Chef Tojo? What has he thought of the film? He's obviously seen it. Is that right?
He has seen it. He has. He saw I believe, like 90% finished version, and then he saw the absolute finished thing.
Yeah.
And it was definitely really nerve-wracking to show Tojo the first cut that he saw.
Mm-hmm.
But he loved it. He really responded well, and of course, on a certain level, you're always going to, unless it's like a harsh expose, you're going to love a movie about yourself. But Tojo really appreciated the more like artistic aspects of the movie the most, like the more dreamy, you know, as you've seen it. So there are these like, you know, dream sequences, dream spaces in the apple orchard and in the Daruma temple, and that stuff really resounded with Tojo. Like he was really very much like up for doing the more experimental stuff while we were filming it, and when he was watching it, I think he expressed that he really loved those dreamier, artsier kind of aspects of the film.
He's also quite a fan of films, isn't he?
He is a big movie fan. Yeah, he. During our interviews leading up to the film, it was basically half a year of me and my co-creative on it, Natalie Morale, we were getting to know Tojo-san, and he expressed a film that changed his life was Ikiru by Akira Kurosawa.
Mm-hmm.
And I watched it in preparation for the film. Like, I'm a Kurosawa fan, but I'd never seen Ikiru. And I could really see why the narrative of Ikiru, like, really resonated with Tojo, of this, like, whole idea of, like, there must be more to life. You can break out from your rut. Because Tojo, I think, felt like he was in a rut in Japan. And he felt a little bound by tradition, and Ikiru is a film that I think transformed his life in a pretty major way in showing him that there are different ways to think about life. So I think that's quite beautiful that, you know, he's a chef, but he sees himself as an artist.
Mm-hmm.
That he doesn't, like, draw the boundary of, oh, I'm a chef, so I can't think about things this way. He thinks about film as an art form that transcends in the same way that his cooking transcends barriers and, of course, brings, like, the West and the East together. So it's all kind of, like, mixed up together with, the art form of cooking and the art form of film.
Yeah, that idea of food and family, as well as creativity, I mean, that's all one big thing, isn't it, for him? And there's no separating one from the other, is there?
No, exactly. Yeah, he doesn't draw a line between those things, like family, you know, goes into it as well, like cooking for your family is, of course, like a formative thing. And then watching movies, enjoying music, watching TV, appreciating art. It's not like he can only draw inspiration from other chefs and other cuisines. He can draw inspiration from every art form in the same way that, as a filmmaker, I like to draw inspiration from a myriad of other things into the work that I do.
Yeah, he's got this marvelous persona, and I can't see why he isn't irresistible as a subject of a film. I mean, he's almost like playing a character. But as we watch as we watch your film, you know, this is a character that's fully formed and has so many layers, and you see that even from the beginning as he's talking about his childhood and the journey from Japan to Canada. He adds these things to his life as layers, and it's just a remark. I mean, we all know who he is living in Vancouver, but I mean, when we watch this movie and we see how deeply rooted it is in his persona, you think, well, yeah, of course he's going to be the subject of a film like this, and such a compelling one. Well, was it, you mentioned a moment ago these discussions you had early on before making the film. Was it difficult to convince him to make a movie like this?
Not necessarily. I mean, it was and it wasn't. Like, we had a little bit of a proof of concept already because when the Michelin Guide came to Vancouver, I interviewed him as part of, like, this promo piece for the Michelin Guide, and that's how we first met. And so he knew we had already a very good conversation on camera for like an hour, and I had filmed it in his restaurant for an hour, you know, so he already knew that there was this, like, rapport, and he had seen the piece, so he knew, okay, I'm in relatively safe hands here. This is not just some, you know, for want of a better word, bullshit artist who just is, you know, painting castles, you know, making castles in the sky here. This is something real. But at the same time, has been burned before. As you say, he seems like such an obvious subject for a documentary.
Mm-hmm.
And there are definitely people who have felt that way in the past, because, like, his team told us about, like, at least two attempts in the fairly recent past, I think, to make this movie happen. Or not this movie, but a movie about Tojo. And both times it kind of fell through for whatever reason. So that both gave us a positive and a negative. Like, it gave us a negative in the sense of, like, well, okay, well, we've tried before, so this better work this time. But it gave us a positive in the sense of, like, okay, third time's the charm. Let's actually make it happen. And as you say, like, we deconstruct him, you know, like we get access to, I think, you know, quote unquote, the real Tojo.
Yeah.
And I think that is because he feels like, okay, this is my chance. I'm in my 70s. I'm finally making this movie. I'm going to leave it all on the table and really just be raw and vulnerable and expose myself to the extent that I can in this actual movie that is now actually happening.
And you take him in the film back to Japan, and it reveals so much about him. As we see, you know, him travel and talk about his past at various places, as well as try the food at various places. What is it like to watch him eat?
it's really a joy to watch him eat and to chat with chefs and discover new people and new flavors. Like one of the scenes in the film is that, you know, sort of like 80% Shibata in Kyoto. That's the scene that the guy who makes the soup stock, clear soup. And that was a surprise that we sprung on him, that we were going there, because like Harada is like impossible to get into. His book the year in advance and yada yada yada. And, it's just like a very special establishment. And it was a real joy to see him kind of revert back to the young Tojo that, you know, first experienced Western food in Vancouver in, you know, the 70s and 80s. He's already so inspired by the dashi flavors that he was tasting at Harada. And there was the back and forth with Harada, but there was also the back and forth afterwards in the car as we were driving to the next destination. He was talking animatedly with his sous chef, Ryu, who was there on the trip with him, about, oh, we got to do something with dashi for our menu. You know, oh, here's how we can do it. So it's really interesting to see him, like, enjoy food and to always be thinking in the same way that I might be if I'm watching a movie. Like, you're enjoying the food and you're enjoying the movie on a very basic, primal kind of level, but you're also thinking, oh, how can I use this in my chosen art form? How can I draw inspiration from this, and how can I kind of utilize this to better myself, to better my craft? So there's always that duality with Tojo. Like, it's not just about enjoying the food. It's about, getting inspired as well.
Yeah, this idea of reinvention, that comes up throughout the film. I mean, you know, he reinvents himself when he comes to Canada. And he continuously does that throughout his career and obviously in his cuisine. Reinventing things. You know, it's just fascinating to watch your film and think about what Canada was like over 50 years ago now, 53 years ago. And, you know, there were only, what, 3 Japanese restaurants in Vancouver then?
Yeah, there were 4
really?
When he came. Yeah, just 4.
And even the basis of his cuisine and his menu, you know, cooking seasonally and sourcing locally, that's always been key. And, you know, that's something that a lot of people do now, don't they?
Like, idea of my small impact and farm-to-table and locally sourced, that's definitely, very much a thing to the point now that it's almost a say these days, right? Like, it's a bit of a cliche, like, over this, like, hipster farm to table kind of small impact kind of restaurants. It's definitely something, because Tojo could have gone the opposite as well. He could have gone like, oh, this fish is flowing from Japan overnight. You know, he could have gone that direction. There are highly awarded sushi places in Vancouver that do that. That are not like, oh, we're using the best of Vancouver, BC seafood. Instead, they're like, no, we're using tuna was flown in from, you know, Japanese fish markets this morning, yada, yada, yada. Like, it seems like now it's like a guarantee, like, of course you do, like, the farm-to-table
sure.
kind of thing.
Yeah.
But it's definitely not a given.
Yeah. I'm assuming you've been able to eat food made by Tojo. I was just wondering, in terms of food that he makes at home, I mean, that must be something special altogether, was it?
Yeah, well, it's very special. Of course, the dishes that he makes at his restaurants for his paying customers are usually delicate, mm-hmm. you know, they're more minimalist. They are, you know, in the vein of, like, a, you know, omakase.
Mm-hmm.
When he's at home, he, you know, there's a scene in the film where he makes yakodon, the chicken and egg dish,
yeah,
which is, of course, a lot heartier and cozier and more, you know, more home cooking. And it's also funny to be filming at his restaurant, because in the middle of the day, like at any restaurant, they do, you know, what's known as family meal
right.
at the restaurant, which is when all the chefs drop everything and they have a shared meal together, like lunch.
Uh-huh.
And something I had there a couple of times when we were filming was this, like, you know, curry that they make, which couldn't be further from Tojo's, like, delicate
yeah.
way of making dishes, but you had this, like, you know, hearty, comforting curry, and you had this hearty, comforting oyakodon, and that is, both are, I mean, maybe say, but also, like, favorite dishes that Tojo has made are those cozy, warmer, family-style, hearty, comfort foods of the stuff that he makes at home and the family meal curry at the restaurant.
A lot of the movie is dealing with his family. He talks about his parents and his siblings. We don't notice much of his family that he has here in Vancouver. For example, is there a Mrs. Tojo?
There is a Mrs. Tojo. Her name is Tojo, and she is briefly seen in the film when they're eating oyakodon, and briefly seen when they're gathering oysters on the beach.
Mm-hmm.
But she did not be featured to any sort of, like, real extent in the movie.
Uh-huh.
Which, you know, that's her prerogative. I do believe it's a little bit of, like, a cultural thing where it's like, let's not pull spouses, family members too much into this. Like, let's make it purely about Tojo and his life. I would have loved to have featured her more. But that was one of the caveats when we were, you know, in pre-production was, yeah, don't feature the wife too much. Don't
yeah.
feature the children too much. Like, that's yeah, we keep that separate.
Yeah, and it adds almost a layer of mystery in the film. But at the same time, you reveal so much about him that it's almost incidental. And
yeah.
That's what makes the personality that's central in the film, this character essentially, so interesting and so important. I found quite moving, Mads, the part in the film where he talks about his identity, and he talks about being Japanese as well as being Canadian, and
yeah.
They're very much both parts of his identity in that sense, the cultural identity. They're very important to him, aren't they?
They are. Like, he's very much a Japanese man who is very proud of being Japanese, who loves Japanese culture, and who loves Japanese foods. and who loves sake and all that jazz, you know, like that's very much still a part of him. But he has definitely taken to Canada in a big way and loves Canada just as much and sees himself as fully 100% Canadian. And yeah, there is that scene in the film where it's like, yeah, some people say, oh, you're Japanese. Some people say, oh, you're Canadian. He's like, no, I'm both. I can be both at the same time. It's as simple as that. Like, he doesn't, I don't think he intellectualizes it too much in the way that someone else might. Like, oh, I'm in search of my, like, what does it all mean to have this, like, dual identity? Like, what does that do to me? It's more just like, no. He's pretty easygoing about it. I'm both. I'm Japanese. I'm Canadian. That's it. As I retort when he says it, I say, yeah, you're just Tojo. Yeah, and he says, yeah, I'm just me. It's not something that he, I think, intellectualizes or sort of thinks about in any sort of like abstract manner. So it's like, no, it can be as simple as being both at the same time.
Yeah, as somebody who has Filipino parents, and I'm not alone in this. When they watch your film, they can see themselves in a way, and how they're viewed by other people, and at the end of the day, what their cultural identity is, just by looking at Chef Tojo's example.
Yeah, and I think it's part of the reason why it was very important for us when we were making the film to have authentic voices behind the camera as well as Tojo in front of the camera. Like, the film literally would not have been made without Natalie Murao, who's my, on the film, she's credited as a writer. She's my co-creative on this. And she is fourth generation Japanese Canadian, Yonsei, as they say.
Mm-hmm.
So it was pretty crucial to have someone on the team who could understand that aspect of Tojo's culture of having a foot in both worlds, of having a foot in the Japanese Canadian world. It was definitely something that we strove to make sure was authentic and lived and reflected in the form of the movie, to even though Tojo kind of takes it for granted that he's Japanese Canadian, we definitely put a lot of effort both in pre-production and during production to make sure that, yeah, the film also knows what it means to be Japanese Canadian.
Indeed. Is this your first feature?
This is my debut feature. Yeah.
It's a hell of a debut. It's a beautiful film. Are you working on another film now?
I'm working on a handful of projects. Yeah, I'm working on both scripted and unscripted stuff. Like, I want to do more documentaries, but I would also like to take the leap into the scripted space at some point as well. Like, I've made a lot of scripted short films, so. Yeah, I'm developing both documentaries and scripted projects at the same time. Yeah,
it's just a beautiful film, as I said, and quite moving. I enjoyed it a great deal. Congratulations, Mads, on it, and continued good luck.
Thank you so much. Yeah, it's very exciting. Tonight is going to be very exciting. I think, like, we definitely will audience. Which I think is probably going to be, like, you know, 200 people there just from Tojo's, circle of customers. Like, I know that there's, like, a lot of customers coming. So I'm less nervous tonight knowing that, okay, even if they hate the movie, they love Tojo, so they're going to clap, I think, either way.
Well, I'll bet they'll clap for you. I so appreciate your time today. Thanks for this.
Yeah, no, thank you so much. It's a really nice interview, really, really nice questions. Thank you so much.
Visit viff.org for tickets and information on the screenings that are left for the chef and the Daruma. It's director, Mads K. Bäckvold joined me on the line from here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plante.